You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Looking for some sparkle under the tree? Kendra Scott has a great selection of gifts for everyone on your list. From a classic pendant necklace to an on-trend statement earring to something customized just for her, visit KendraScott.com and use promo code KICK or mention this ad in your local Kendra Scott store for 20% off your next purchase. That's KendraScott.com and promo code KICK for 20% off your next purchase. And now, enjoy the show. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. As things heat up in the impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump's quid pro quo with Ukraine, I'm welcoming back to the podcast New York Times bestselling author and renowned intelligence expert Malcolm Nance. Malcolm has a great deal of expertise in that region and will shed some light on the Trump-Ukraine relationship, as well as how the Trump-Russia connection runs right through Kiev. He explains why U.S. support for Ukraine is in our own national interest, what Rudy Giuliani is getting from being President Trump's bagman with Ukraine, and how Paul Manafort and Vladimir Putin started the conspiracy theories about Ukrainian involvement in the 2016 election that are now at the heart of the Trump-Ukraine scandal. Malcolm also talks about his latest book, The Plot to Betray America: How Team Trump Embraced Our Enemies, Compromised Our Security, and How We Can Fix It. He says Russia has been keeping tabs on Donald Trump since as early as 1977, that over time, Trump went from an unwitting asset of Russia to a willing asset, and he also sees Russia's fingerprints on Trump's withdrawal from northern Syria. Plus, Malcolm weighs in on the importance of protecting the CIA whistleblower and Hillary Clinton's assertion that Democratic presidential contender Tulsi Gabbard is a Russian asset. Coming up with Malcolm Nance in just a moment. Happy to welcome Malcolm Nance back to the show. Malcolm is the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Plot to Hack America: How Putin's Cyber Spies and WikiLeaks Tried to Steal the 2016 Election. He is a globally recognized intelligence community member and a counterterrorism analyst for NBC News and MSNBC. And now he's out with his latest book, The Plot to Betray America: How Team Trump Embraced Our Enemies, Compromised Our Security, and How We Can Fix It. Malcolm, welcome back to the show.
I'm very happy to be here.
Well, Malcolm, you were the first person in the U.S. media to identify the Russian attack on the 2016 election as a foreign intelligence operation, and you've been banging that drum ever since. When the Mueller report finally came out earlier this year, were you surprised by the conclusions or perhaps lack of conclusions in there?
I wasn't surprised by the conclusion, certainly in section one of the report, which is the bulk of the report. Because I had pretty much written three books, Plot to Hack America, The Plot to Destroy Democracy, and had finalized The Plot to Betray America. And what I had done was precisely what later U.S. journalists would come out and find, and what the Senate intelligence reports would find, is that Russia did carry out, indeed, an attack on the United States using information warfare assets in order to influence the American population and choose a individual, Donald J. Trump, as president of the United States. So it was no surprise to me that those findings were there. Some of the findings within the Mueller report clearly showed that they went out of their way to pull their punches and not to find people guilty of crimes that were pretty clearly in plain sight. Certainly things that neither you or I would be allowed to get away with, like ignorance of the law.
And the report, as you mentioned, couldn't link the campaign's involvement with Russia directly to Donald Trump. And of course, Attorney General Bill Barr released his famous memo, quote unquote, exonerating Donald Trump of any direct collusion or coordination with Russia. You don't seem to be very convinced by that. Why not?
Well, I'm certainly not convinced because, as we've learned, 2 weeks after Barr put out that famous memo, that turned out to be a lie. That the Mueller report itself showed that Russia did this for the benefit of Donald Trump, and also identified that Donald Trump and his campaign were well aware that Russia was doing this for their benefit and sought to benefit from their activities. What the Mueller report didn't identify or couldn't identify was the individuals who were the links to the Donald Trump campaign and Russia. And as they said on page 2 of the report, because the Mueller team found that individuals were not available or not made available, one of them most noteworthy is Konstantin Kalimnik. Konstantin Kalimnik was believed to be a former Russian intelligence officer and believed to have been associated with Russian intelligence. In the report, they said they could not gain access to him. He left the Western world, went back to Russia, and in fact, he was the person who passed on the polling data from Paul Manafort to the Russian oligarch Oleg Deripaska, and there are suspicions that that polling data was used to influence, to sharpen the Russian intelligence influence operation. Interestingly enough, he comes back in the current impeachment campaign that we're hearing because Rudy Giuliani is asserting that it was not Russia who hacked the United States, but in fact came up with a fantastical story that it was in fact the pro-American or pro-Western, pro-European Union, pro-NATO government of Ukraine who was doing it to discredit the pro-Moscow part of Ukraine.
Right.
And that they hacked the Democratic National Committee and not the Russian Military Intelligence Agency or the Russian Intelligence clandestine service that the United States and every other intelligence agency in the Western world has agreed upon because we have their fingerprints. That story came from Konstantin Kalimnik to Rudy Giuliani.
Interesting. And I think that you reveal that there's also a Manafort connection in terms of the source of this conspiracy theory that Trump's embraced.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And what listeners should understand is when you think of the word Ukraine, you should think of two different parts of Ukraine. Paul Manafort in the early 20s, you know, around 2012, 2013, was working in Ukraine as part of his dirty tricks, you know, attorneys, you know, Manafort, Stone and Black, you know, a company called the Dictator's Lobby. And he was working for the pro-Moscow government of Yanukovych. That government was corrupt. And it was not only corrupt, it was overthrown in a popular uprising called the Maidan movement, the Maidan uprising, which pushed him out of power, forced him to jump onto a jet and go back to Russia.
Right.
When they went through all of his political party's offices, they found a black folder, a black book they called it, which showed handwritten handwritten bribes and funds paid to lobbyists and dirty tricksters. And in there was Paul Manafort's name, showing that he may have collected as much as $70 million. You know, and that money is what he was convicted for in his money laundering case. He was keeping it offshore in Cyprus, and he was bringing it to the United States through a series of, a series of illegal maneuvers, because all of that money was black money. It was dirty money that was taken from this government. This whole campaign between Kilimnik and now Rudy Giuliani trying to say even that folder showing Manafort was bribed or paid for all of his dirty tricks in Ukraine around 2012 to 2014, that is all fake. And that everything we know about Paul Manafort is all been rigged against him. And in fact, he asserts, Giuliani, that the Democratic National Committee servers were hacked by the pro-NATO, pro-European Union government of the Ukraine, and that all of this, that Russia and the pro-Moscow Ukrainians and Paul Manafort are all innocent of everything that they've been accused of. Donald Trump has bought into this conspiracy theory and believes that that is the truth about the hacking of the 2016 election, which, of course, gets Vladimir Putin off the hook.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and absolves Russia of everything so Trump can go out and open, whatever is going on in his mind, whether he wants to open relations or lift sanctions on the richest oligarchs. But he is clearly proving himself beholden to them to the point of utter obsequiousness. And for your listeners, that means slavish devotion.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you think that Trump's embrace of these wild conspiracy theories of Ukrainian involvement in the election and corruption involving the Bidens and Ukraine might also be a way of giving him cover or an excuse to back away from supporting Ukraine and adopt a more pro-Russia policy?
Well, he has a very pro-Russia policy, even though some of the things that he claims his administration has done against Russia were actually Congress doing them against Russia and the Defense Department just carrying out its natural duties in the defense of the United States. He has never backed off of supporting Russia. And so by embracing this conspiracy theory that the DNC server was actually hacked by the pro-NATO Ukrainian government, it completely lets Moscow off the hook for attacking the United States.
Yeah.
And as I said, we're not bad when it comes to this level of intelligence. And trust me, I worked at the National Security Agency. If it's electronic, we can track it and we can use it. We're good when it comes to that. And tracking Advanced Persistent Threat 28 and Advanced Persistent Threat 29, known as Cozy Bear and Fancy Bear cyber malware suites that were used to attack the United States, was not very hard because the United States government, the White House, the Pentagon, civilians, and other agencies had been attacked by these Russian entities that belong to the Military Intelligence Directorate and the Russian Clandestine Service. They had been attacked many times before. So we knew their digital fingerprints, but Russia also didn't know that we were in their actual building where these activities were occurring using a NATO ally. And we were literally watching their intelligence officers log into their secure workspace and then log into their computers. So the digital fingerprints and the actual visuals are extraordinary. But Donald Trump, of course, he doesn't believe in intelligence, so he doesn't believe that any of this happened. All he is doing is trying to get Russia off the hook, and it conveniently helps in his mind, he thinks this helps his case in his impeachment inquiry.
Yeah.
It's laughable if it wasn't so sad.
Well, the other thing that I have to wonder is, what did Rudy Giuliani get out of all this? I mean, at this stage in his career, why would he take just such an idiotic risk and sign up to be Trump's bag man for this quid pro quo with Ukraine?
I analyzed the Republican Party and Giuliani and all of Trump's other henchmen in two different chapters. One, there are the dirty tricks teams, And these are the Roger Stones, the Paul Manafort's, the Mike Flynn's, the Jeff Sessions, people who thought that they were, when they won because they were, you know, purer of heart and, you know, stronger of soul, and that they were indeed the masters of the universe, and that there is nothing that they couldn't do once they took over power. Which, you know, lying, no problem. FBI monitoring my secret communications to the Kremlin, they wouldn't dare. You know, investigate us because we're, you know, aligning ourselves with foreign powers, Saudi Arabia and Qatar, and, you know, selling weapon systems to autocratic Turkey. No one will look into it because we own the universe. This is where they made a mistake. Paul, you know, Rudy Giuliani, I think, is a hardcore true believer that all of his previous estimations of Trump were wrong, and that, you know, his friendship with Trump has put him in a place where he is aligned with what Trump supporters believe is the greatest president in American history. And Donald Trump said that, you know, and I'm a scholar of you know, history and military history, and I am a huge fan of George Washington. And for an African-American to say that, that's something. you know, usually big Lincoln fans. But George Washington was truly an extraordinary man. And to say that you are a better president than George Washington, who set all the norms, all the standards, and all the paces, shows a level of you know, mental pathology that that requires, you know, a second, third, and fourth look.
Yeah, and your book also really describes, as you kind of touched on a moment ago, this motley group of characters that Trump relies on, including washed up or aspiring political hacks, shady business associates, and various other random third parties. I have to wonder, with all the resources at his disposal, why doesn't Trump do things through the normal channels?
Well, because he's played his game on the New York stock, on the New York real estate market. And he, you know, this is why he got rid of all principals, and he is getting rid of all the principals in his cabinet. He prefers deputies because he wants lackeys and gophers. And, you know, the way that you describe that, you know, as I wrote it in the book, the best way to describe it as, you know, a motley collection of grifters, liars, and thieves. And including Rudy Giuliani, which takes me back to your previous question. I want to answer that really quickly. Giuliani, I suspect, really truly believes that Donald Trump is going to be the greatest president in history because he drinks the same Kool-Aid as the people who he sees at rallies. And they think that these rallies is our America. You know, and we all know that Donald Trump is ruling for 40% of America, not the other 60%. And that's that masters of the universe, you know, tribalist attitude of we will always be the dominant tribe and the rest of you will dance to our tune. And I refer to this as not that the United States in their estimation isn't a constitutional republic. It's a constitutional autocracy in which they keep the trappings and the, you know, the paper of the Constitution in front of you. But in fact, they themselves are ruling as autocrats. And Giuliani has, you know, if you remember Giuliani time, right, during his period in New York City, he was pretty much an autocrat.
Right.
And I think he has tied himself to Trump. And I think he's a true believer that believes Donald Trump is the greatest president in American history. And you know what's worse? I have a prediction that he will be the first president of the United States who will have a black shroud over his portrait.
That would be pretty dark. You know, I'm curious. The withholding of military assistance to Ukraine has been framed as a threat to U.S. national security. For anyone who might not be that well-versed in the politics of that region, why is military support for Ukraine in America's national interest?
Well, first off, you know, most people, and I get this question quite often, they think, well, what does this country have to do with us? What do we care? What do we care about this country that borders Russia? Well, look at it this way. The reason that we fought World War II. And the reason that we fought the Axis powers, you know, with fascist Germany spreading across, you know, all of Europe and North Africa, along with Italy and Japan, who were, Japan taking over the entirety of Asia. The reason we fought this is because the United States, though it was still just a fledgling power who had only shown its might in the Spanish-American War and World War I, stood for the concept that American democracy and its constitutional basis was the heart and soul of what we thought ideologically should be spread around the world. And World War II showed us, the attack on Pearl Harbor and Germany's declaration of war on us showed we could not hide from the rest of the world. And so we mobilized and we brought our forces and our men, including my 15-year-old father and my World War I veteran grandfather, who both went and fought in World War II, in order to defeat this ideology of power destroying humanity and using, you know, dictators and autocrats to choose, to determine how people lived. And the concept of the right to self-determination for your own country to determine how you want to live in freedom and in peace became a ground foundation of our world and why we lost all those men and spent all that treasure in World War II. And I often tell people, if you really want a good look at how people truly felt back then, go watch the movie Captain America, the First Avenger.
Really?
And you see a character who is truly steeped in the belief that we, America, are fair and good and strong and are aligned against horrible powers. And there's actually a great book called The Virtues of Captain America, which outlines that truth that my mother and my father, you know, grew up in. And that was the fundamental underpinning for why we created the United Nations and why we created the North Atlantic Alliance, in order to maintain that stability and help nations achieve democracy and self-determination. Mm-hmm. When the Soviet Union collapsed, after holding all of Eastern Europe hostage from the end of World War II, remember when they took over all the governments, established communist governments, established KGB control over their intelligence apparatus and their police forces, they were slaves to the Soviet Union. So when the Soviet Union collapsed in 1989, all these nations, Ukraine, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Georgia, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, they were given for the first time the right to self-determination, to determine how they would govern themselves since the end of World War II. Ukraine chose to go into a pro-Western alliance, to align themselves with NATO. And, you know, one of the first acts that they did was to work with the United States to disarm themselves of the 100 or so atomic bombs that they had in their possession. And believe me, they regret that now. But Russia has since hardened back into, you know, from a democratic experiment into a hardcore dictatorial oligarch-backed autocracy. And they seek, in some instances, to bring some of these nations back into the sphere that was the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And that's why Russia invaded Crimea and just seized it, and then started an insurgency that is racking eastern Ukraine. And they eventually intend to politically overthrow that government and put a pro-Moscow government back in, because Russia does not want Ukraine to be pro-NATO, pro-America, pro-Western European countries. And that is why the United States stood by them and offered to sell them offensive weapons like the Javelin missile. Mm-hmm. When Donald Trump stepped on the scene, he decided, before he was the nominee, he got the Republican Party to change their political platform at the convention away from the defense of Ukraine and to remove all talk of allying with them. You recall
right.
that during the Republican convention. That came, according to Rick Gates, from Donald Trump's team, which was led by Paul Manafort, right?
Right.
Who had been a paid dictator's lobbyist
right.
for the pro-Ukrainian government. Ukraine now is sort of a Rorschach test for whether you truly believe in democratic, you know, democratic alliances and whether we should support our NATO allies or whether you believe Donald Trump is correct in all mm-hmm. things and Ukraine should go back into the Soviet, the Russian sphere. See, I almost said Soviet, and it's almost the same thing.
Old habits die hard. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to go back a bit to the Soviet days and the origins of the Trump-Russia relationship. You say in here that the KGB had been collecting intelligence on Donald Trump since as early as 1977. How did Donald Trump end up on their radar way back then?
Well, if you recall back in 1977, you know, from 1945 till 1989, all countries of Eastern Europe, and that is Germany, was split in half into a East Germany and a West Germany, with West Germany being the democratic side and East Germany being a communist country that was established by the Soviet Union. Below them was Czechoslovakia, which was the former Czech Republic and the former Slovak Republic thrown together into a communist Czechoslovakia. And then you had communist Hungary, communist, you know, communist Bulgaria, communist Poland, communist Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, and communist Ukraine were all part of the Warsaw Pact, which was an alliance of nations that was forced upon them by the Soviet governments, that was forced upon them after they created a iron wall and decided that that part of the world would fall under communist sphere. The Czech Republic at that time in 1977 was a communist country for almost 40 years. 30 years. And Donald Trump's first wife, Ivana, was a citizen of the Czech Republic. And when she would go home or when she would call home, she was under complete surveillance from the Czech intelligence agency. Now, wow. Luke Harding and a German magazine, Bild, and the local Czech paper in Prague did extensive research on this and actually got all of the written records from the Czech intelligence agency on Donald Trump.
Wow, that's incredible.
And so, yeah, it's a great story, and I'm reemphasizing it because it was lost to a certain extent in 2017 when it was first mm-hmm. written about. But Donald Trump's wife and her father, who was the reporting authority for Czech intelligence, he was the informant, knew everything about that family. And they would monitor all the phone calls. They monitored all the visits they made there. They saw that, monitored the Donald Trump's political aspirations. And Czech intelligence was a direct subordinate agency to the KGB. It was run by the KGB. And Donald Trump's information went to a main database back in Moscow. And when he decided he wanted to visit the Soviet Union in 1988, the Russians knew 10 years of information about him that he had told no one, including wow. his aspirations to run for president in 1988. So the Soviets facilitated his trip and entertained his fantasy of building a Trump Tower in Moscow in 1988. Fast forward in 89, the communist government collapses and Russia goes into this paroxysm of transforming into a capitalist country. But you have to remember, Russian intelligence didn't change. And Vladimir Putin went from being a mid-level KGB officer in East Germany to being the head of Russian intelligence under Boris Yeltsin because he blackmailed the prosecutor general who was investigating Yeltsin. So he acquired all of Donald Trump's files. Yeah. And then by 2014, when Trump came for Miss Universe, if you're an ex-KGB officer and Donald Trump is there and is begging for a tower, like all good intelligence officers, you say, bring me the file on Donald Trump.
And when Vladimir Putin looked back into this file on Donald Trump stretching back four decades now, what do you think that he saw that made Trump an attractive, quote-unquote, useful idiot for Russia?
Oh, more than a useful idiot. He just started as a useful idiot. I think he was a useful idiot in 1988 when he didn't know what was going on around him, and his statements, you know, were helpful to the Soviet Union. His presence of flying to Moscow and going on tours within tourist agency, which, by the way, is the KGB travel agency that shepherded around Bernie Sanders and anybody else that went to the Soviet Union at that time. You were under constant surveillance. So Trump was. It was later on when Russia became a capitalist nation and saw that they had to money launder their illicit billions and billions and billions of dollars in cash, that Trump's properties became valuable, because money laundering through property, real estate, was a huge boom industry. Certainly here in New York City and in Florida, where they have large populations, and in Europe, all across Europe, virtually every spare apartment in London was bought by Russian oligarchs in order to hide their cash into legitimate assets. So Donald Trump then became an unwitting asset, which means he didn't know where the money was coming from, but he didn't care. So he was, you know, useful to them. I believe that by 2014, when he got the Miss Universe, and the 12 richest oligarchs sat him down in a private two-hour meeting at the Nobu restaurant, and he walked out saying two things. One, we will have a Trump Tower Moscow, which, of course, he thought would earn him $3 billion in profit. And he had said, we learned this year, he intended to offer Vladimir Putin a $50 million bribe by giving him the top penthouse at the top of the building, which shows that he didn't understand Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin might be as rich as much as $200 billion of stolen money.
Right.
Because he controls the entire Russian oligarchy with the Russian intelligence agencies. And when he decides you're not going to be rich anymore, he seizes your assets. So Trump has underestimated this man. But Putin, as a human manipulator, a person who sees the faults of an asset and manipulates them, he saw a rabidly avaricious man who would do anything for money, which, by the way, was an old KGB recruiting tactic. Don't recruit liberals. Always recruit conservatives and people who want money. People who have, you know, horrible narcissistic personalities with power-driven egos, because you can assuage that with money. Liberals and the communists and things like that, they are fellow travelers, and when they turn on you, they have legitimacy. So never recruit them. Donald Trump is the perfect example of a recruitable asset. And all you have to do, and I have a section of the book called The Five Dangles, is dangle things in front of him that he wants more than life itself.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike us in the West, some in the West, the Soviet Union and the Russian Federation used its national scholarship of psychology and human behavior as part of their intelligence apparatus. So Vladimir Putin, as new Russian president, who sees all this money coming in and hears about Donald Trump, who has a hit show in Russia called The Apprentice, which is true. It was a hit show in Russia. And he starts seeing him as an asset. And he brings in the dossier and he goes, you know what? This guy's easy. Putin would have bought in every scholar in the country, every former intelligence officer and advisor, including the four on his staff, and they would have said, let's turn this guy into an asset for the Russian Federation, not the United States.
Now, you also say that it's not just Donald Trump who has financial ties to Russia, but also members of his family, including Don Jr., Ivanka, and Jared Kushner. What are those connections?
And, you know, those connections actually are less – let me put it this way. Donald Trump Jr. and the Trump Organization, they confessed on camera that most of their money in the early 2000s came from Russians, which is why he's hiding his financial records, because it will show that this money came from very shady sources. Also, that their loans to the Trump Organization were underwritten by Deutsche Bank. But right. Deutsche Bank had to be underwritten by someone because no one in the world would loan Donald Trump money in New York City. No American bank, no Western European bank, only this bank. And to do that, you would have to have loan guarantees from people who had real assets. So Donald Trump Jr., Eric Trump, they are all implicated within the family organization. Ivanka Trump, on the other hand, went to the East. And she got trademarks, patents, made clothing. And it's almost as if the family was reaching out in 360 degrees to cover all bases of where there is dirty global money. And so Ivanka's to the East in China. Donald Trump Jr. is to the West in Saudi, in Russia. And then you have Jared Kushner, who has his 666 Fifth Avenue building that was in $1 billion of debt. Right after Donald Trump becomes president, gets instantaneously bought out and his debt paid off by a conglomeration from the government of Qatar at the time that he was Donald Trump's personal envoy to Saudi Arabia that was boycotting Qatar. I mean, it is salacious and incestuous in every way. It's not just Russia that they align themselves with. There's a group I call the global oligarchy or the globigarchy. It is a body of people, of billionaires, whose loyalty has no flag. And their flag is to money, quantities of money you and I cannot imagine. And right. That's why they defend, they party with each other, like Ivanka Trump and Wendy Deng, right? Rupert Murdoch's former wife, right. Who it was rumored was trying to date Vladimir Putin at the same time that they were partying in Dubrovnik, Yugoslavia, or Dubrovnik, now Croatia, I went there when it was Yugoslavia, forgive me, partying with Wendy Deng and the wife of a Russian oligarch. There is a class of people that have that kind of money, and then there's the class of people that wants to be in that class of money. And this money, just think back to the robber baron periods, the Carnegies and people who there are only a few of them in the world. And the Trumps desperately want to do that, be in that group. And the presidency of the United States is a stepping stone because that does not get you into that group. Mm-hmm. That just gets you near them.
Yeah.
And that's why I outline all the chapters that show their ties. These people are all willing to compromise U.S. national security and financial security and election security. They don't care about this country. They just care about the money this country represents.
Now, I do want to ask you about Syria because the Ukraine scandal has sort of overshadowed everything that happened there recently. But we've gotten very little in the way of a rational explanation from the White House for Donald Trump's sudden decision to pull out of northern Syria. Why do you think Trump did that? And do you see the hand of Vladimir Putin behind that as well?
I'm going to go back a little while and show you a chain of events. One of the things that I try to explain to people is, and they ask, well, how do you get these books out so fast? How are you years ahead of everybody? Because I am not a journalist. Okay, even though I play one on television, I'm actually a national security analyst and an intelligence analyst.
Right.
And as a former intelligence, collector and officer, my job was to analyze very dangerous situations from the ground up because I was enlisted, which means I was the guy who actually had to collect the data that would go to the White House, from the field. And I could see those patterns much, much more quickly than, the news media could because I had raw, stolen spy data, right? Mm-hmm. And we have to analyze it ourselves in a room, or on a collection site to determine right away if it's a threat to the United States. And then we would report that up the chain of command. Journalists don't have that. And they also don't have the depth of 20 years of intelligence experience starting in the Cold War where I could go to any Middle East country and see the KGB, right? And so they would go by reporting, interviews, analysis, and that would give them a body of knowledge, but it wasn't allowed into their reporting. right? That's journalism.
Okay.
So I had the ability to move faster. But let me explain the Syria part to you.
Mm-hmm.
Way back in 2016, Russia and Turkey had an air engagement over the Syrian-Turkish border. And a Russian fighter jet was shot down by Turkey. 2 months later, the foreign minister of Russia shows up in Istanbul, has a quiet meeting with Erdogan. Erdogan instantly announces that they were going to be making stronger ties with Russia, and then they repaid Russia for the loss of their fighter jet. Within a month, a coup d'etat was thrown in Turkey, and Erdogan takes deeper power, eliminates all his political enemies, guts the armed forces of anyone who believed in the old Ataturk government, the secular government, creates a hardcore political Islamist political party in that country, and then suddenly aligns himself with Moscow in the sense that they are now allowing Russian operations on their border. They are working themselves more in alignment with Russia and their occupation of Syria. He has less objections to the Bashar al-Assad government. And then the United States starts carrying out operations with the Kurds. They defeat ISIS in a 2-year offensive. And you have to remember some things. Turkey is the country where ISIS was allowed to enter and transit over to Syria.
Right.
On every airliner.
Wow.
Turkey's the country that took 1 million Syrian anti-government refugees and allowed them to buy life preservers that were essentially pieces of styrofoam and get into these rickety boats that were made by Turkish manufacturers by the hundreds of thousands and allow them to try to go to Greece and let them die by the thousands on the ocean. That all originated in Turkey. These events showed that Turkey was making an enormous quantity of money off of ISIS. All of their illicit oil sales to Syria went to Turkey. All of their gold that they had minted and their coins that were minted in the caliphate were minted in Turkey. They had ISIS-backed groups operating in Turkey and at the border, and the Turks didn't do very much about that. But when ISIS collapsed, Turkey suddenly saw the number one enemy was the Kurds who were fighting with the United States Special Operations Forces. The same Kurds who that the Russians would send a mercenary group to try to seize their oil fields that Donald Trump is now defending.
Wow.
And that who we slaughtered 250 Russian mercenaries because we had 12 U.S. Special Forces and a radio. So that shows our combat power. This is the same Kurds that Donald Trump, on a flash after one phone call with Erdogan, decided he would abandon. Knowing that the Turkish forces would come down, seize the corridor, which is their main lifeline to Iraqi Kurdistan, and then start an operation to wipe them off the face of the earth. That interest benefits Turkey, it benefits the Assad government, and it ultimately, the United States turned over all of our bases to Russia.
You know, as a longtime intelligence guy, I want to ask you, Republicans like Senator Rand Paul have floated the idea of outing the CIA whistleblower, and Don Jr. supposedly did expose the alleged whistleblower, or who he believes to be the alleged whistleblower. Do you think that they're putting that person's life at risk, and what kind of obligation does the CIA have to protect that person?
Well, first off, whoever the officer was, whether it's a man or a woman, they were not working in a covert status, mm-hmm. which means they were not part of the clandestine service and they were not having their identity protected as a part of their natural daily duties. It is a crime to out a CIA officer who's in the clandestine service. But we don't know the status of this individual because he's protected. He or she is protected under whistleblower statutes, which say that you cannot name that person. Look, you're working in an office building. There's only so many CIA officers who have been assigned to you. You're pretty much going to be able to eliminate number one, two, and three that were on the phone call. If there was just one, it's easy. What they're doing is allowing their surrogates like Donald Trump Jr. and Fox News or like today, the Washington Examiner and Joe DiGenova just published a name and started calling him a more dangerous person than the assassin who killed Abraham Lincoln.
Wow.
The intent is to intimidate that person, if not incite the death of that person. And I am, look, I am far too old and far too jaded to realize, to not recognize a mortal threat when I hear one. The CIA does not have an obligation legally to defend this person, but the FBI does. The local police force does. You know, if he lives in Northern Virginia or if he lives in, you know, the town of Langley, they have an obligation. But so does everyone who swore an oath to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States. And we see that betrayal occurring on a minute-to-minute basis of people who say that they are United States senators and U.S. congressmen. And if I had my way, I would move for immediate censure of Rand Paul or any congressman within Congress who outs this person or threatens to out that person.
Yeah, we've got to protect that person. Well, before we go, I absolutely have to ask you about Hillary Clinton's assertion that Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard is herself a Russian asset. Have you seen any evidence that this might be the case? And if so, is she an unwitting asset or is she a willing asset?
Well, first off, Hillary Clinton never mentioned Tulsi Gabbard as an asset at all.
Oh, really?
She only mentioned Jill Stein. And there's a lot of evidence to show that Jill Stein, from her first meeting when she went to have dinner with Vladimir Putin, where she her platform was vote, you know, allow Trump to become president and let him tear down government and the Green Party will rise into that space. And also, you know, her the Green Party ignoring this is one of my favorite things. Ignoring the plea from the Russian Green Party that they were being manipulated by Moscow. Huh. I mean, and not to work in Putin's interest by getting Trump elected. I mean, Hillary Clinton has, you got to remember something. She is cleared for intelligence, still very advanced intelligence. And at the time that she was a candidate, she was getting read into the exact same counterintelligence information Donald Trump was about what Russia was doing in the United States. So as also a former Secretary of State who had the same security clearance as the President of the United States, she has a depth of knowledge that would inform her opinion about what she thought about other candidates. But as I recall, she never mentioned Tulsi Gabbard by name. I think it's telling that Tulsi Gabbard instantly jumped up and felt offended. I am certainly not a supporter of Ms. Gabbard. Her positions are bizarre. She only appears on Fox News. She seems to defend herself using pro-Moscow, pro-Trump talking points. I think she's auditioning for a position on the Trump cabinet. The question is she a Russian asset? If she is, which I don't assert that she is, I think she's just in the useful idiot mode right now. Huh. And in fact, wow. If anything, if she's working for Donald Trump and the Republican Party in her commentary, then that moves her to the unwitting asset.
Okay.
Because we have seen winning assets in this government.
Huh. Either way, it's scary. Well, once again, Malcolm Nance's book is called The Plot to Betray America, How Team Trump Embraced Our Enemies, Compromised Our Security, and How We Can Fix It. Malcolm, thanks for talking with me.
It's been my pleasure.
Thanks again to Malcolm Nance for coming back on the podcast. Order his new book, The Plot to Betray America, How Team Trump Embraced Our Enemies, Compromised Our Security, and How We Can Fix It, on Amazon, Audible, or wherever books are sold. And follow him on Twitter at Malcolm Nance. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit KickAssNews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@KickAssNews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.